Hello, I'm Keith Powell, and welcome to Focus Asia Pacific from PCJ Radio International. In Papua New Guinea, people live in fear of persecution. They might be turned on by relatives, chased off their land by neighbors, or brutally attacked by a mob. Why? They believe in witches. This week, Emily Webb visits the province of Chimbu in the highlands, a witch hunt hotspot. It's a place where revenge attacks can lead to full-blown tribal warfare, and where one accusation can destroy a family for generations. Why do so many people here believe in witchcraft, and what is being done to change that? Emily follows one local man whose motive is intensely personal as she discovers his difficult mission to save the witches of Papua New Guinea.
I'm travelling by 4x4 on a very bumpy road through the Chimbu province of the Papua New Guinea highlands. It's a mountainous area and it can be challenging to get around. The province is a hotspot for sorcery accusations, people blamed for causing death through the supernatural. Those accused are often tortured and even killed. Here, sorcery is known as Sanguma. The policeman that I'm travelling with explains.
In our beliefs, when somebody dies, all of a sudden, people believe she was so he was healthy, lived a normal life, and all of a sudden just got sick and died. So that's when sorcery comes in.
Peter Larry Sill is wearing wraparound sunglasses with a blue metallic sheen that matches immaculate navy uniform. He's a man on a mission. He heads up the rapid response unit of the local police force, which means that he risks his life going into situations to rescue people who are in danger of being attacked. For Peter, the work is very personal. His mum, Cecilia, is a survivor.
Way back in 1973, when I was 2 years old, there was a tribal fight. You know, enemy tribes were attacking each other, and unfortunately, my father was killed.
The other tribe raided the village where Peter's family was living at the time. His father was surrounded and died in the fight.
My mom was at home, and after my father was killed, my uncles and my father's tribesmen accused my mom. She was tortured. She was about to be beheaded, killed. So she had to escape.
Cecilia had given Peter's dad a meal before he went into battle. That was a cultural no-no, and as a result, people thought that she was a witch. She had to leave her home with her children, and she could never go back.
Is the house up here?
The house is up there. She's living in the small hut there.
We go to visit her where she now lives, in a remote village in the mountains. We have to cross a river on a precarious tree trunk.
Look out for this.
And Peter receives an emotional welcome home.
Ambe! Yes, ma'am.
Cecilia is nearly blind and sporting a light blue nightgown covered in specks of red. This is the residue from betel nut, a stimulant that people in this area chew constantly. Peter brings some more as a gift. We sit down outside her one-roomed house and she remembers hearing the news of her husband's death 45 years ago.
They shouted and they sent message that your husband has been killed, so I cried and I had to go and see for myself.
And when did you first hear that people were saying that you were involved in this?
Initially, Cecilia says that she was accused after her husband's burial, but as we speak, she realises that some onlookers are listening in and her story changes. I was actually not accused of sorcery, she says. I was not physically attacked. So we've just walked back from the village where Peter's mum lives. And what was really striking is that when we were speaking to her, a huge crowd of people sort of gathered around and were listening in to what we were saying. And she was really reluctant to admit that she'd ever been accused of being a witch. And I was speaking to Peter afterwards, and he said that although it was 45 years ago, she still doesn't want people to know that she was ever accused of being a witch in the community. So clearly there's still a massive stigma. And the problem isn't getting better. It's hard to get accurate figures for the number of attacks. Under 100 make it to court or are covered in the press, but this is a tiny percentage, as most go unreported. Peter says he receives 2 to 3 calls a day relating to sorcery. For some of these, he'll actually help the accused escape. After he rescues them, he works with a local group who run a safe house. This is where Jenny lived with her family for 2 years. They were chased out of their village in 2016 and they've been too scared to return. Jenny's softly spoken and surrounded by her husband and 5 children in this smoky room. Her youngest son is on her lap and as she tells me what happened, she clutches him tightly.
At that time, my children were playing with this other girl in the village, but then the little girl got sick. People in the village then accused my family of being sorcerers because my children had been playing with her.
And did the other child die?
Yeah.
So how did you find out that you were being accused?
My husband was away that day, and when I was walking back from my garden, people began attacking me and calling me a sorcerer. I heard later that when my husband returned and stopped off at the place where they were mourning the little girl, they started beating him up.
After they attacked you, did they just leave you? What happened?
After they cut me with axes, they dragged me towards the place where they were mourning the little girl who died. At the time, I just thought that they were going to kill me, but I struggled a lot and tried to defend myself.
What's shocking about Jenny's story, aside from the attack itself, is that the accuser was actually her brother-in-law. A mediation process has started within the family, and so I joined Peter on a trip to meet Jenny's accuser.
Miss Christina Kutnkai.
My name is John Ambani. I'm the headmaster of this elementary school.
John is showing me the grave of his daughter, Christina. She died on the day she turned 3. It's decorated with plastic flowers in a porch to the side of his house.
On her birthday.
Oh, yeah, the exact date. It was on her birthday she passed away.
Yes.
We walk down to the classroom of his school, and when I ask him about Christina, he's not just upset, he's angry.
My daughter was healthy. She's brought up very well with care and guidance. But she's passing away. That same lady got married to my brother. She killed my daughter, Yushin Sanguma.
The lady he's referring to is Jenny. He believes that she used Sanguma, or sorcery, to cause his daughter's death. He's thought about why she'd do this.
Maybe she's jealous of me being the headmaster within the school and the community, or maybe the food that we eat.
And what do you think she did to your daughter?
Maybe she spoiled her stomach. The girl has got a blockage in her stomach.
Do you think that she did the blockage in her stomach?
Yes.
Did you accuse the lady of being a Sanguma?
Well, I suspect them.
And then the community listened to you?
Yes.
Because I met with that lady, and she told me that the community tried to kill her.
Well, she might tell the truth.
And do you think it's right that they should try to kill her for that sort of thing?
No, this one, when taking somebody as a slave, is not right.
When I met with the family, they said that they...
They don't practice that one.
They said that they have no idea why they were accused... Mm-hmm. And I believe them.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think that they had done anything to your daughter. I mean, it's awful what happened to your daughter, but I believe that they had nothing to do with it.
Okay.
whatever they say to you is not right, because our community has got a record. Within our village, 5 innocent kids have died, and mine makes 6. My daughter has not died from natural cause. She has been only healed for just one day, and then the next day she passed away.
But you teach in your school. I mean, we're in your school and we're surrounded by posters about health and about awareness and all these sorts of things. Surely, as a teacher, you should know that children do just die of natural causes and that it has nothing to do with anybody else.
We identify the cause of the death. If it is natural, it is natural. Okay, if it is Sangoma, we move that it is Sangoma. Sangoma is a spiritual thing. You will not actually see it with your physical eye.
I met this family, and they're now homeless, and they don't have any land, and their children's future is completely uncertain. Their children, they have no idea what's going to happen to them. Do you not feel bad? Do you not feel responsible
no,
for that?
No, I am feeling very sorry about them. I am feeling very sorry about my brothers, because the wife, she's practicing Sangoma, so it is affecting the entire family.
John's clearly looking for someone to blame for the death of his daughter. It's emotional for him. I've heard about another sort of accuser, but this time, it's about the money. Rebecca is a local witch doctor known as a Glass Mary, and if there's an unexpected death in the community, people come to her for answers.
Are you all right to take me into the house?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Rebecca believes that her special powers come from what she calls her Sangoma scanner, a scar on her right temple that looks like it might be from chickenpox. Rebecca's wearing a scruffy baseball cap and chipped green nail polish. She's holding a plastic washing-up bowl filled with water, and she's just chain-smoked 2 cigarettes. It's this, she says, that unlocks her scanner.
I will inhale the cigarettes, then I'll blow the smoke into the bowl of water. When the smoke clears, I'll be able to see the figure of the sorcerer in the water.
And if you see someone who you believe to be a sorcerer, will you accuse them?
If my scanner tells me that someone's a sorcerer, I will tell people. I don't say the name of the sorcerer, I only describe them, if it's a tall or short person or something like that. Then, based on the physical description, people will work it out amongst themselves.
So when you have accused someone of being a sorcerer, of being a Sangoma, is that person ever killed?
I don't encourage killing or torture.
The people who tend to be accused are the vulnerable in society. Older couples with no children, unmarried women, people who don't have others to defend them. And what's surprising about Rebecca is that she's all too familiar with what happens when you're accused of sorcery. Because before she was a Glass Mary, her life was turned upside down by an accusation. Her aunt drowned suddenly and people blamed Rebecca.
They tied my hands and my legs. They used bush knives on me and then they dragged me along the ground to the river. They were planning on throwing me in. But then luckily someone heard about it and rescued me.
It must have been really difficult.
I was really degraded and belittled as everyone thought of me as a sorcerer. I was ashamed of myself. I lost my dignity. I used to just hide in my house, but then I decided to run away.
It was after she ran away that Rebecca says she decided to become a Glass Mary. She went and lived in what she calls a spirit house and trained in the dark arts. Then she came back and started accusing other people. After what she went through, I wanted to know how Rebecca could do what she does.
It wasn't a Glass Mary who accused me. It wasn't a proper accusation. It was just someone from the family.
But you told me about what a bad experience you had when you yourself were accused and how you were an outcast from the community. I just wonder how you can put somebody else through that experience when it was so horrible for you.
That's my job. That's my job. For a sorcery accusation, I get paid 500 kina. They also have to buy some pieces of chicken and some rice.
500 kina is over £100 in the UK, nearly $150. It's a lot here.
Some people listening to this might think that you've turned your own terrible experience of what happened to you, that you've used that to just create financial gain, that you've just used it as a way to make money. What would you say to that?
That's very true. I had a bad experience and I went through a lot. But now my spiritual power flows with money. Money opens things up. So I cannot avoid it.
My meeting with Rebecca makes me realise how much of an industry sorcery or Sanguma accusations is. And when there's money to be made, the problem just goes on and on. But I still don't understand why there are so few prosecutions when everyone knows what's happening. Peter takes me to meet a man called Nugai, whose brother was murdered. He says the case shows why it's so difficult to punish people who've made sorcery accusations.
That's the graveyard here.
This is the grave here?
Yeah.
Okay.
2 years ago, a local engineer died in a neighbouring village and Nugai's brother was accused.
The people from that village came here and burned down houses and they kidnapped my brother.
His brother was tortured with hot iron rods and ultimately died as a result of his injuries.
After he died, we were in the morgue for 2 days and we didn't do anything. But after 2 days, we went to fight and we fought with the people who tortured and killed him. 3 more people died in the fight, so 4 people died in total after the first accusation.
Do you think that you achieved anything by doing that?
It was the frustration that provoked us to go and fight, but at the end of the day, we achieved nothing. We lost everything, and we regret it.
Nugai knows the people who killed his brother. They live nearby, and I'm here with the police, who are also aware of the case. I ask him why nothing has been done.
There was an investigation after it happened, but no one's been arrested. I know that my brother was unlawfully murdered. But if I pursue this and I get them arrested and put behind bars, I know it might provoke the situation again. Because if they go to prison, their relatives might come and attack us again. It might ignite more tribal warfare. There's no end.
Afterwards, I speak to Peter, who's pragmatic about the situation.
So, the thing that really struck me when we were speaking to Nugai is that his brother's killers are basically just walking around the community and he doesn't seem to be able to do anything about it.
Yes, they're walking around, freely.
But the fact that also the people who murdered his brother will probably never face justice because he doesn't want to create more tribal violence.
No, we have to have witnesses, people will go and witness.
So it's quite an impossible job that you have then when you don't have anybody who's willing to be a witness.
That's right, because they fear that other things might happen. They might provoke trouble fighting. They might have other people killed related to this. So that's a fear that keeps them to themselves.
So how frustrating is that for you?
Oh, it's very frustrating because when somebody's been committing a very intractable offence and it's not prosecuted, then as an officer, I don't feel good with this.
This work isn't actually part of Peter's job. He does it on a voluntary basis as the police station receives no extra support for tackling sorcery violence. And it's pretty full on. He's been chased away from villages and threatened with guns just trying to help people accused of sorcery. And it's not just a problem here. There have been attacks in the capital city and last year the general election count was delayed following accusations of sorcery. I've been told that the government has a sorcery national action plan and that changes are happening. I decide to go to the capital, Port Moresby, to meet the man in charge of implementing it.
I am Lawrence Kalinoy, Secretary for the Department of Justice and Attorney General in Papua New Guinea. Up to now, we have not successfully prosecuted one sorcery-related killing.
Yes, you heard that right. He said not one case. That's under the specific legislation introduced by the government to deal with this. So what changes are happening?
We've set up a national sorcery action plan, which has various components to it. Law enforcement is one.
So you mentioned law enforcement. What exactly are you doing?
Through the various police stations that we have throughout the country, particularly in those hotspots, we call them, to mobilize police so that they will have some designated units so that there is immediate response to any allegations of sorcery-related violence.
So have these changes been implemented yet?
We are in the process of trying to have that implemented.
The plan was introduced 3 years ago after a video of an accused woman being tortured went viral and the government was compelled to act. As it doesn't appear to be in place yet, I ask if there's anything that the government is doing now.
Yes, right now it's through law enforcement. We try to strengthen police in those particular provinces of concern.
And how are you strengthening them?
Through resourcing.
Oh, really? Because I just came from Chimbu. And I spoke to the local police force and they say that they get absolutely no additional funding.
Yes, that's correct. When I said we're trying to resource police, that's really at a higher level where we try to look for funding to bring the funds available down to the operational level.
So if Chimbu is a hotspot for these sort of sorcery accusations, then surely the police on the ground should be getting money by now.
Yes, I agree.
So why has there been that delay?
No, it's a difficult question, to be honest. It's just a resource allocation issue. There has been efforts made to try and address the problem.
You say efforts. What efforts, though? If it's not funding, what efforts are there?
We have actually made any sorcery-related killings by law a capital crime, with a death penalty being mandatory. We did that knowingly that in this country, unfortunately, our people respond to violence better.
So you say that you've introduced capital punishment to address this. Having been on the ground in Chimbu, one of the things that really struck me is that there's a cycle of violence. So if somebody makes a sorcery accusation, then another family will react and then there'll be violence between the two families. The people that I've spoken to have said the reason that people don't actually report these cases is because they don't want to increase that cycle of violence. So surely by introducing capital punishment, that would just spiral the cycle of violence even more because one person will die, another person will die, and then there'll be repercussions for that family.
No, not quite. If we do nothing, then that will spiral out of control. The government must be seen to be in control and visit that particular crime with the most serious penalty that is available under law.
I can really feel the frustration of people on the ground trying to address this issue because speaking to you, as much as there are plans in place, it really is making absolutely no difference to the people trying to tackle this on the ground.
That's correct. I'm also frustrated. I wish I could do better.
But you are the person in control of all of this. I mean, you are the top man. Surely, if you can't make a difference, who can?
In terms of getting the work done, we are in control. It's just a resource allocation bit that we're not able to appropriately resource everyone who is involved in this fight against sorcery and sorcery-related violence.
So the people on the ground are receiving no support. They're trying to work on this by themselves. When can they expect to receive support from you?
I'm really hoping that it'll be soon.
How
soon? I'm unfortunately not able to give any straight answer to that.
In Chimbu, there was really a sense that changes were happening here, that this was an issue that the government was really taking seriously. But after that conversation, it doesn't look like anything's going to be changing anytime soon.
So for Peter, back in Chimbu, how difficult is it to carry on with almost no support?
The work that I'm doing here, it's a bit rare. It's not done by other police officers like me. There's many things that make me lose hope. I sometimes feel bad and I take it personal when I don't achieve good results because of lack of resources, logistics, people are not cooperating. There's no job satisfaction.
So what is it that keeps you going then?
At least I'm saving some lives. I'm bringing some people to justice. So I do that within the little community that I serve.
You obviously came into this because of your mum and because she was accused of being a sorcerer. You've got your own kids now. What sort of country, what sort of future do you want to create for them?
I grew up
in an environment where after my father's death, mom was accused of sorcery, and I grew up as a fatherless child, cared for by other people. And in my dreams, I wanted to go to university and do some job better than being a police officer. But I didn't go because growing up without a father was very hard. So what prompts me to be actively involved in this fight against beliefs in sorcery is, in future, I don't like my children to be growing up in that environment because of father died or mother died because of sorcery accusation. Very weak and vulnerable people are dying. My grandchildren must know that there was a belief, but it's never been proven. So that's why these things cannot be practiced, so that innocent people do not die just because of accusation of sorcery.
Thank you very much, Emily Webb, for that look at the witches of Papua New Guinea. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of the program. If you wish to contact us to let us know what you think of the program, you can always contact us through Twitter and Facebook. So, until next time, friends, I'm Keith Perron, wishing you well, saying so long, take care. We'll see you again very soon. Bye-bye. Yeah.